It's Wednesday, September 4th, 2024, and you're listening to episode 627 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 38 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Mary.
This is Doug.
And this is Wayne.
All right, Doug, so what's today's topic?
Today is bucket list games that we would like to run as a GM.
Yeah, so this is something that you suggested, and I love it. What we are going to do is we are going to work through our bucket list of games that we want to run before we kick the bucket and have not yet been able to for one reason or another.
I could just send a picture of my gaming shelf.
I could also spend a whole episode just ranting about why I've not been able to run these games. But that's not what we're going to get into is why. We're just going to instead say what. These are the games we really want to run but have not had the chance to. So we're going to give ours. I assume most people listening to this have theirs. So no, you are not alone. And with no further ado, let's get down to it. Doug, since it was your topic, why don't you go first?
Do we want to do one and then go around?
Yeah. Let's not do them all. We'll alternate until we run dry. So.
Okay. So the first one that I would like to GM is just a long-term campaign. What I mean a long-term campaign is just a couple months, maybe like 15 to 20 sessions or so.
Mm-hmm.
Because almost all my games have been one-shots, or maybe it's like me GMing two games in a row.
Yeah.
It's never been, and I'm not looking for my game to last 40 years or whatever the record is for the world's longest D&D game is, but I just want it, you know, to be a good month and a half of games.
Yeah.
That's the first one.
You know, I'm thinking through this, and yeah, at least in the time that I've known you, either someone else has been running the campaign, or like in the case of the West Marches game, it's a rotating GM. So yeah, now I think about it, you haven't run any like genuine campaigns that were just yours.
Yeah, and there's so much like brain muscle you don't get to do in a one shot. A one shot, you present everything there. You don't really have that long term bending your ideas around what the players are doing.
Yeah.
You know, digging into what they find interesting.
Or even just being able to dig into world building.
Yeah.
Or the slow reveal things, or yeah, complicated plots. There's all kinds of things you can't do in a one shot. Especially because in the one shot, in many ways, it works like a first game. You spend half of it trying to even figure out who the characters are, and they're trying to figure out how do they gel with each other. So I like that one. All right, let's just go keep going around the table. So, Wayne, what's up?
All right, I have always wanted to run a Fallout St. Louis game.
Ooh, okay.
I'm a huge fan of the Fallout video game series. Played them, most of them. I can't say I've played all of them. I've never played Fallout 2, but I've played all of the others, including the Brotherhood of Steel Tactics and things like that.
I was going to ask about that because I was going to ask, are you going to stick with the Fallout canon for St. Louis?
No.
Because Fallout does have a limited canon for St. Louis because that is a location you go to. I think it's in Brotherhood Tactics.
Yeah, no, I would not keep the canon because part of what I want out of a Fallout St. Louis game is to develop the setting of St. Louis in the Fallout world.
Yeah.
I want to develop my own raider gangs. I want to develop what are the locations that still exist and now are places. You know, what are the settlements around? And that's something that I wouldn't get if I was following. There's not really a lot of canon in Tactics, but still, I want to be able to create my own vaults and things. And,
yeah, I feel you.
So I would want to create that world because that's a big part of it for me is any Fallout game, I want the world to be living and happening. Things are happening in different areas. If they're not there, it's still happening. And when they get there, what they see will depend on when they go there. And the factions all have motivations and are playing off each other, regardless of what system I would use. And I actually do like the look of the Modiphius's Fallout system, but I would have my own chart going of faction rep. So like, I particularly like New Vegas. You don't have a karma of good or bad. You have faction rep with
individual
each
faction standing.
That's what I would do. I would have a sheet going with that. And what the players would be doing would impact their rep with each of the factions. that would be a big part of the game because I want them to be like building something. I like the idea of the campaign being you're coming out of the vault because the vault is going to collapse in another 25 years. So you have to build the settlement for the rest of the vault to come out to.
Would you make Merrimack Caverns the vault?
That'd be a great place for a vault.
Explain that for anyone who's not local, Missouri, I believe, has the second largest concentration of caves in the world. I think the only place that has a larger density of caves is Tennessee. And I could be wrong on that fact. That's just what I think.
It might be Kentucky.
Yeah, I won't see it. This is not one I'm prepared to bet my life on. I thought I've heard that factoid somewhere.
We have a lot of limestone. We have a lot of caves.
Yeah, we do have a lot of caves. That is inarguable. And Merrimack Caverns is one of the bigger caves that they still have not fully mapped out, but it has an underground river. It's got underground lakes. It's got a lot of minerals. Its entrance is mostly, I think, dolomite, which is very resistant to pretty much everything.
And it's been built up as a tourist attraction already, so they have some infrastructure inside where people can walk in easily and walk around.
Yep. I have pitched this game 4 times, knowing that my group will veto it every time because it's not a game that they particularly want to play. But I want to run it so much, I just keep pitching it anyway.
Okay, here's what I recommend. To get Brandon and Chad on board, tell them you want to run a Skies of Glass St. Louis game, and then just go gonzo.
Oh, I had Brandon was on board.
Oh, really?
I had him on board with Fallout.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, he was definitely a vote into Fallout favor, but the rest of the group I couldn't get.
Okay, so for mine, I've got 2 Battletech, 1 not. Which one do you want me to start with, a Battletech game or a not Battletech?
If you've got 2 Battletech, might as well start with one of them.
Yeah. All right, let's start with one of them. This is probably right at the top of my list. This is number 1.
Silver Sentinels?
Silver Scorpions.
Scorpions. Close.
Yes, I have been trying to run this campaign for literally something nigh on 30 plus years and have never gotten a chance to run it. Many, many moons ago, back when I was still writing for FASA and for AWOL, when AWOL was a thing, and FASA had Battletech, not Catalyst, and I came up with this idea for a mercenary company that had been fighting in the peripheral worlds, what they call very cleverly the periphery. And when the clans invaded, they were just up there trying to deal with a pirate issue. The clans run over them, you know, bulldoze them because high tech, no one's prepared for this, et cetera, et cetera. But instead of folding, the group goes to ground and starts picking off clan supplies and attacking their back lines and becomes this sort of disruptive guerrilla force behind their lines that eventually under something called Operation Scorpion, which that is canon in Battletech, that is not my canon, Comstar picks them up and starts slipping them enough intelligence and enough equipment, because it is also in canon that when the clans would capture Intersphere military equipment, they would simply mothball it. So it was all sitting there in these caches waiting to be taken. And so they basically pick up on that and become this force that no one wants to admit exists. Because it's an embarrassment to the clans. Comstar doesn't want to get caught with her hand in the cookie jar. This is pre-Tookiid, which if you follow Battletech, you'll know what that means. And so they just kind of stay back there and run this sort of what's called a Fabian-style war against the clans. And it's this great underdog story. And what's funny is the person who vetoes me the most on it ran it himself for a different group and brutalized the concept in the process. And like did none of the story right, none of the characters right, nothing. And I had, like I said, I have been wanting to run this game for 30 plus years and have never gotten a chance to do it. So that is on my bucket list. All right. Mary, what you got?
We're going to start with the one that is the easiest to explain, but also like ridiculous that I haven't been able to run it yet. And depending on edition, it started with Expedition to Castle Ravenloft in 3.5 and became Curse of Strahd in 5e. And either way, I still haven't gotten to run it.
Just the module?
The module.
So you're not looking to run a Ravenloft setting?
No, game. No. It's specifically that module. I kind of fell in love with Castle Ravenloft when I first read the hardback on Expedition. And it just... It's a set, not a setting that interests me beyond this specific adventure, but it's something that I've always been, I've prepped it so many times. Like, I've read through the whole thing and I've wanted, like, got it all set up, and I just have never been able to find a group of people who either is interested and hasn't played it yet.
Yeah, my only experience with it is the board game that was based off of 4E, and the board game was really good. It has story in it. It was one of those games where you have different missions you do, where you, depending on how many people you have at the table, you do a different mission.
Yeah.
And you build out the dungeons, and you have objectives, and there is box text to it. And so it's basically like you're playing through the module only as a board game. And 4E works 4E? Really yeah. good as yeah. a board game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So out of curiosity, I'm amidst some ignorance here. Mm-hmm. I know what the module is, and I know the gist of its plot. I actually played in some full-blown Ravenloft campaigns. But I'm curious. I know, like, Temple of Elemental Evil is meant to be... it's a module, sort of. Because it's meant to take you, I think, through, like, levels 1 through 8. So it's got some meat to it. How long do you think the module of Castle Ravenloft would take to run?
It's been a while since I've read through it. I believe it's set up to be, I want to say, like, 6 to 8 sessions at least.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so one of those full hardback books now.
Yeah.
So it's an arc, but it's not like...
Yeah, it may actually be longer than that. I don't know. I know that in 3.5 it started at 5th level because it gave you suggestions on running it as a one-shot, how to truncate it, and then it also gave you suggestions on things to run before it to get your party to 5th level.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the details now. Mostly it was just a case of, like, this whole castle is so well mapped out that I just want to run the exploration of it. I want people to be able to wander around and in that sort of dungeon crawl-esque, but with story way.
Yeah. Okay. So I was curious how long that would run, because if that was like a one sitting or two sitting sort of module, be like, well, hell, we can just take a brief interlude from our AP and get that one knocked out, get something off your bucket list. But if it's a 6 to 8 game one, we'll squirrel that.
Okay.
We'll squirrel that for the future. Okay. Maybe it'd be a good between campaigns palate cleanser. Okay, that takes us back around to Doug. What you got for number 2?
Years ago, I watched the movie 310 to Yuma.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I love that movie, the one with Russell Crowe and everything. And I just think that would be a really cool setting and theme to run a game around, you know, with westerns and cowboys and having bounties and different kinds of ethical quandaries that the players could encounter.
So are you thinking something? Now, I have seen 310 to Yuma, and I think Russell Crowe, isn't the other main character Christian Bale?
Yeah, that's correct.
I think, once again, I'm not going to stake any money on this, but are you looking to run a historical western, something that's more like a Penny Dreadful, pulp sort of western, weird west that has like...
I guess it would be more historical western,
okay,
more or less, but I wouldn't mind having elements of like weird west or even that weird Will Smith movie with the giant...
Wild Wild West. Get some steampunk in your western.
Yeah.
Based off a TV show.
Yes it is.
Yes.
That I have never seen. I'm aware of its existence.
Yeah. But I wouldn't want to go full in that direction. It would be like salt on a dish, you know, just a little bit here and there.
Yeah, it's a little bit of implied magic or mysticism, a little bit of steampunk, but basically you're running a western.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's something I've always wanted. I want to play in or run a western game, but every time westerns are brought up, it always goes weird west.
Yep.
People say they won't even consider westerns unless it's weird west. I get my western fix in Skies of Glass games.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because you're riding in horses. It kind of has that, a little bit of a feel to it.
Yeah, no, it does. especially the more frontiersy you get in terms of where you're located. So, yeah, I get that. But, you know, Doug, it's kind of interesting because you could actually knock out 2-1 by running a Western campaign. You could actually get two items off your list at once. Actually, there's two of mine that you could, the two Battletech ones, if you did it right, you could blur together. But we'll get to that when it's my turn. So, Wayne, what is your second one?
I've talked about this one a lot. And it is something a little more broad in that I just want to run the Quiet Year and base a campaign off of that. I want to, with the players, build a map, and that is the map of the area that we start the campaign in. As the cards make you create NPCs, those are characters and NPCs in the area, the settlement that you're going to be dealing with. The things around that you create, as bad as you try to make everything for your community, that is what you have to play in.
Yeah.
And I just love that idea of it being this collaborative world building, but specifically building it on a map and having the map to point at and things. And then you have a year's worth of shared history before you ever start the game.
Or an era, depending on how you interpret the game.
Right.
Yeah. But I think the other fun thing there is you get to blamestorm a lot because somebody's like, man, this is some BS. It's over here. Be like, well, you did it.
Yeah, you drew it on the map.
You did it. You drew the card, and that's what you called.
If you remember, I took a contempt token when you did that. Yeah. But I have to put it in the game because you drew it.
Yeah. I was contemptuous. You did it anyway. What kind of dysfunctional relationship do we have here?
Yeah, I think that would just be a lot of fun because you have that everyone has done it together and you have a bit of history to the setting already. So you can call back to things that happened in the map building game, but you actually develop and dig into what you've created.
You know, you could actually kind of daisy chain some of these things together. And I realize this is not what you were suggesting. This is just me riffing. Is start with the Quiet Year to get the base setting. Use a game like Decima, which I'll link in the show notes. I'll link both of these in the show notes to start building your character relationships and your relationship to the world. And then now from there, you've got to take that and go into your actual campaign, whatever game that happens to be.
Well, and I've also thought about adding in some of the solo RPGs into world building. So if, say, somebody draws something on the map, there is a solo RPG where you develop the history of an object.
Yes.
You could do all of that and have that come into the game too. I just like this idea of whatever game you're actually running, having these other systems that are helping you create things that my own creativity would have never come up with. Get myself out of my own comfort zone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Just force yourself to deal with things that you wouldn't have come up with.
I just actually got picked up a new solo RPG. This is actually, I think, the first true solo RPG I've ever owned. It was a Kickstarter for a game called Home. Mm-hmm. And just H-O-M-E, like where you live. And the setup of it is, it's sort of like a mix of like Evangelion or Pacific Rim or something, where you have to like build a mech and then build your pilot. And then like the game takes you out like on an adventure arc and you have to try and make it back to base. And I just got it in the mail, so I haven't played it yet.
So I have one that I just backed on Kickstarter. The Kickstarter's over. It's already done. I just don't have the actual product yet. It's a wrestling one. But you're not the wrestlers. You are a wrestling promoter, is running the... So you actually are creating the individual wrestlers, but you're booking the matches and doing the storylines, and you're rolling to see if people are injured in the matches, if the how the matches actually go. You're doing popularity and things. It just seems like it's going to be a lot of fun. And something like that I could see doing with something like one of the wrestling role-playing games, doing a very short campaign, using that to do the promotion management, but then having role play of the individual matches with people.
And
the promos and things.
All right, so I'm going to break up my Battletech ones and go for the other one here. I still want to run a Hunter game. The World of Darkness, Hunter's Hunted, or Hunter the Vigil, or whatever, but I still want to run a game that is basically normal humans fighting the supernatural. And I mean, you don't have to be 100% normal humans. I would allow for like faith. I would allow for, depending on the version you're looking at, some of them have things like latent psychic abilities or hedge magic or like witchcraft sort of stuff. So you have things that are not as powerful as what the supernatural has, but you do have a little bit where you can go there to.
It's more than just a shotgun.
Yeah, it's more than just a shotgun, but you can also play a fully functional character who just has a shotgun and a grudge against vampires and werewolves for some reason. But I, for decades, have wanted to run a Hunter's Hunted game or Hunter the Vigil or whatever we're on now. There is a Hunter's Hunted 2. And
somewhere there was Hunter the Reckoning.
Yeah, there's, but I thought in Hunter the Reckoning you didn't play normal humans.
I think that one leaned more into the supernatural elements for your characters.
Played almost like these semi-angelic agents or something.
Well, then there are things like Rippers where you are taking parts of the things you're hunting to use against them.
Oh yeah, have you seen? It's a bit of a pulp movie. It's one to watch for fun. It's nothing serious. But have you watched? It was the day shift or something like that, about vampire hunters, and they have like an organization and their currency is vampire teeth. Cause I don't remember what the teeth are used for, but they're used for something. And this guy screws up so much that they take him off of the night shift, which is when the vampires are all out, and they instead have him wandering around at noon. There's basically nothing going on. And it has Snoop Dogg in it with a minigun. So it's okay. It's an important work of art.
Sounds worth watching.
It is very. It's
Snoop Dogg with cultural minigun.
Touchstone.
Yeah, I may be off on the title of the movie, but I'll link that in the show notes. It's a fun one to watch. Don't go in with anything serious. I would actually like to run a more serious game, and I got somewhat I've been inspired for it by a variety of things over the years. I mean, those novel Dracula, a whole bunch of things. But one of the other things that kind of reignited my interest in that is a video game that came out relatively recently, not like past year, but I'm not talking like 30 years ago either. I think it's called Judgment. Once again, I'll get the exact title and link this, where you play a band of survivors in the middle of a spiritual apocalypse.
Oh, I know the way to, it's like a settlement building one.
Yes, kind of. That's yet another game like RimWorld or XCOM where I made people I know and setting them loose. And I tried to pick, because you have a few development paths. And so I tried to pick everyone's development path based on what I thought they would do if this was reality. You know, what would they go for armament? Would they try to approach this religiously? And if so, under what religious model? And so on and so forth. But that's my number two, is I really want to run a hunter game. And every time I've tried, it's either been vetoed or sabotaged. So, Mary, you're up. What is number two?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with the one that is more recent in one of the many rewatches of The Mummy and The Mummy Returns. We're talking 99, Brendan Fraser, the good ones. Silent Movie wasn't bad, no. Anything beyond that, we can ignore. But what I got out of watching them this time is that these are fun movies, and there's a lot of story here that goes way deeper than anything you're allowed to explore in a two-hour movie in 1999 with 1999 special effects.
I don't know when they made The Scorpion King.
I know. That was 2001, and there were still terrible special effects.
That scorpion monster was awful.
No, but it's one of those where that world goes a lot deeper, and I've never had the urge to run any kind of pulp adventure like that before, but this last time I was watching them, I was like, this is a game. This is a campaign. There is world building here. There are really interesting concepts for bad guys that are nuanced and fun, and I have no idea what the player characters, how they would fit in, but this is a world I want to run.
It's funny, because as I'm looking vaguely in your direction, the thing that my eyes keep landing on visually, just because great color design, I guess, is the spine of Spirit of the Century. Mm. So I'm not saying that'd be the system you'd use, but it would work well in Spirit of the Century.
Mm-hmm. And it would be run in that sort of Indiana Jones style. Like, this is an adventure game, but set in this time period where adventure
almost got to play in a campaign, and we created characters, and then it all fell apart. We never got to play it. But our concepts were archaeologists with jetpacks. And we were basically blending the Indiana Jones raiding tombs, finding treasures things
with the Rocketeer. Yeah. So, I was wondering if that's where we were going.
Yeah, it was going to be kind of a pulp game with jetpacks.
It does seem like you could almost make an entire game, which I realize I'm kind of going back to Spirit of the Century here, by just take any three of like the 1930s pulp stories, you know, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers, Tarzan, you know, whatever, any of those things that were, and I know not all of them were created in that year, but I'm just going for a genre here. Just pick any two of them. Like, you have to mash them up. Like, Buck Rogers and Tarzan, go. Just see where that lands.
Oh, but, well, and I think what actually sparked this one, this most recent time, is watching the second movie. You have these shoehorned in, like, predestination stuff with all your main characters that didn't exist in the first movie, but whatever, we can pretend they didn't, which does make for interesting player character storylines and ins if you build them into the setting.
Alrighty, so Doug, we're back to you. Now, what is your number three?
My number three, okay. A while ago, I was looking for a 5e campaign book.
Okay.
And I looked and looked, and I looked at some of the WotC books, and I didn't like them. So I finally picked up this Midgard book, and it just looks so interesting to me. I don't know what it is exactly, but every time I open the book, there's something I'm like, oh, I would like to do that. Oh, I would like to do that, you know.
Who's the publisher on that?
Kobold Press.
That's Kobold, okay. Because I'll link that one also in the show notes, because I'm assuming everyone knows what D&D 5e is. I'm not on top of that. I'm not doing WotC.
I said we don't need to link WotC anymore.
And I'm not doing them any favors anyway until they, you know, get rid of the Pinkertons. So
maybe that could be a campaign. You play the Pinkertons.
That could be my Western game.
If someone,
you're the Pinkertons.
Yeah.
If so-and-so had ever finished Satanic Panic, then, you get to play the Pinkertons, and you're trying to collect those magic cards, because if they're released out of sync, it will destroy the world. It will give the gamers too much real magic or something. Wayne, what is your number three?
So my number three is one that changes over time, and it is whatever the last thing that I bought or backed on Kickstarter is. So right now, the answer to that is Planet of the Apes. I've always been dying to run a Planet of the Apes game, because I'm a huge Planet of the Apes fanboy. And I mean the original movies, not the... I love the remake. Like, the new movies are good. I love them. But I love the original timeline. That's the world that I want to run in. And the game that I just backed, one of the things that it got with the stretch goals is a cloth map of Ape City. It's like, and all these special things for it. And I love the setting so much. And I love the idea of running it with maybe a couple of apes and a couple of humans on the run from the gorillas. Something kind of calling back to the Planet of the Apes TV show that was set a couple hundred years before the movies were.
Yeah.
I love the setting. I love the idea of the apes. I love the Man Out of Time storylines as well. But I think it would be a lot more fun running the campaign if some people were from that era, some people weren't. It would be really cool to have at least one astronaut, but I want somebody that's a human that has realized they can talk, that is that era modern day human, and then an ape, and just a mixed group, and how do they get along together while they're out into the forbidden zone being chased by gorillas and the remnants of humanity that also are out to get them. And,
you know, actually, Wayne, while you're talking about that, you gave me a show topic idea. Obviously not this episode and probably not the next one, because our next one's going to be our player bucket list, the games we want to play that we've not gotten a chance to. But I'm thinking maybe for the topic after that, we should do a show called Gaming My Shelf, where we just write down or bring with us or whatever the games we own that we have never run or played. We have never actually done anything with these games. These are just the games sitting on our shelves, utterly untouched, apart from flipping through it and looking at the art.
Maybe
Avatar
even building-
The Last Airbender, Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah. Oh, hold on to that, because I'm sitting here looking at my own shelf, and
might have built a character with no reason except to explore the system, but clearly that's not going anywhere.
Yeah, so I've definitely got some stuff there and then some things downstairs that I have never played nor run. And I'm not even talking like, oh, I want to try the second edition versus the first. I mean, I have never opened the title. And I think there's a show there because I know all four of us have these.
Oh, yeah.
All righty. So my third one, another Battletech game, but this one, you could tie it into the other game, the Silver Scorpions game. And where I tied this in or could tie it in was at one point it was sort of a testing and recruitment tool because they needed people who were good at thinking on their feet and fighting individually or in very small groups. So in Battletech, because like Star Wars, we have monothematic worlds. So, you know, desert planets, ocean planets, whatever. And Battletech is not too bad with this. They do have worlds with diverse biomes and industries and such. But they have the game world. They have Solaris 7. Now, the setup of Solaris 7 is that it is effectively taking both battle mechs and their pilots, both of which are scarce and valuable resources. But because there's so much money to be made in turning that into entertainment, that you join a bracket and you play your way up, and they've got detailed rules for setting the purse on each fight, figuring out how much of, if you win the fight, what salvage do you get? If you lose the fight, how do you try and rehabilitate your character? And maybe you have to take some underworld loans out or something like that. And they allow you to broadly belong to one of a couple groups, which is there's a group of major organizations. There's a group of, and I think those are called stables. There's a group of sort of unionized pilots called co-ops. And then there's also ones that are backed either by major states or major crime syndicates. But you have your fans and you have your detractors and you have battles. And then the battles, they had some really cool added rules for the maps for like hazards. One of them is a giant factory where things can move and shift and conveyor belts can push you around and whatever. And there's such a rich world, at least in the box set that came out a while back.
Well, and I remember that, some things with like the mechs, they have things like axes and swords.
They turned it into a lot of, I got to play in a game that lasted for all of a session, but I did get to play a little bit in Solaris 7. It's something I'd love to go back to.
They offered an alternate set of rules that tried to zoom into the combat a bit. So each combat round is actually broken into three rounds. So if you fire like a high heat weapon, you get flash heat that then dissipates over the next couple of rounds instead of balancing it all at once like you would do in regular Battletech. But once again, I thought they did a great job of really creating a world that kind of mashes up Battletech and Shadowrun in a certain sort of way. And I've always wanted to explore that and play with like a group of people that were a group of friends in one of those circuits and follow their life story and all of the out of mech action and the fan bases and the political maneuverings, or your rival trying to hire someone to do a hit on you because that's easier than beating you in the arena. And there's a lot to do there that doesn't really sound like or run like a typical Battletech campaign. And once again, I've never had the chance to run that game. All right, so Mary, what's your number three?
So the third one is probably the one I've had the longest in the back of my head and never gotten to run. And it's sort of system agnostic. It started in D&D just because that was a fantasy setting. But similar to Doug's Western train heist theme, one of the things I've always loved is the Oregon Trail. Whether it's Oregon Trail 2, the video game, which was the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that concept of leading a group of people through a wilderness with its own dangers, but including things like dragons. Like, this is not just you're worried about starving and attacks from Native Americans. There are significant dangers, but on these roads where people continually have to travel Sporadically.
Yeah. I mean, even things like keeping the right number of supplies or an amount of supplies versus the weight that puts on the wagon, and then how that affects the likelihood of you are literally in the middle of nowhere and no one is around, good or bad, right?
Right.
Hostile, right. Inhostile, helpful, whatever. And suddenly the tongue of the wagon breaks.
Yes, that there's the that element of survivalism is something that is absolutely integral to this concept, where it's not just external threats. It is, did you pack enough bullets and or meat to survive the trip?
So I'm going to ask you a question, and whether people get this joke or not is going to tell me whether they played Oregon Trail or not, the right Oregon Trail. Can I play Skeletor? I mean, I can accept Skeletor dying of dysentery, as weirdly non sequitur as that is, but
we could work it out. Yeah.
I'm all sure. Right. So that we'll negotiate that in character creation. Maybe I'm just like an Amish guy that just calls himself Skeletor. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, where like every time I think about it, it has to be a limited magic setting because magic solves too many problems.
Well, I would assume it'd be a non-magic setting.
Limited or non. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you said that, I was literally just picturing turning the Oregon Trail video game, the old classic green and black Oregon Trail video game into just role play this out.
She did mention dragons, though.
Right. Oh. I do want it to be a fantasy setting, but it doesn't. I don't want high fantasy. I want somewhere down below where you can. I want to play with monsters, but I want them to. You know, I don't need you. I don't want you to rely on Fireball.
Okay, so instead of Native Americans or bandits assailing you, it might be skeletons.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I dig. All righty. I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up. We will be back next episode with the flip side, the player bucket list of games we desperately want to play in and have not been able to get anyone to run for us. And Wayne's already wincing because he knows what one of mine is. And there's no stopping it now. But that aside, check the show notes for links to a bunch of stuff. Any of the specific titles we mentioned that are less well known than D&D, I'll do my best to link to. And beyond that, have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2024. Listeners are free to use this episode in a non-commercial endeavor, so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. If you wish to support this show and its related endeavors, you can do so at patreon.com/feartheboot.